Good morning to you, wherever you may be on this fine day. Welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion, with politics, with military and economic schemes. Sometimes they're all intertwined. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'll try to explain why these things are happening and what it means to you and to your family. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His one and only covenant, in which you are invited to participate. If you are rational, this will be the best part, the most rewarding part of today's program. Our phone number, should you want to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. Also, as I've shared before, those seeking verification who may be audio shy can go to introtogod.org, yadayah.com, prophetofdoom.net, or questioningpaul.com, and they will find there the evidence for the conclusions that we will make on this and every program. I have shared on this program before that there is very little difference between politics and religion, and that those who are political are usually religious, those who are religious are usually political, and that the two are intertwined. At last night's Democratic convention, the terms that were shared by and spoken by Mrs. Obama were firing up the faithful, vision and values, her deep belief, kindred spirit, and inspiration. Now, that sounds like a Christian revival meeting as opposed to a political convention, but nonetheless, the headline on BBC was Michelle Fires Up the Faithful, which is precisely what she was attempting to do. She was trying to arouse the faith in their constituents. You see, in the case of almost all presidents, all politicians, there is no substance that a rational person would say, this is a good person who made good decisions, who made this country better by their decisions. And so all that there is hope, belief, and faith. That's why the last campaign was change we can believe in. He speaks of vision and values, but not vision and values that are God's visions or values, not overall human visions or values, but one man's visions and values, because that one man envisions himself as messianic. She said that she deeply believed in him. Belief is the antithesis of trust and reliance. You can believe in that which you do not know. When you do not understand, belief is required. When you know and understand, when your conclusions are based on facts and logic, trust and reliance is the term that you would use. If you're trying to inspire thoughtless minions, then you will use the terms believe, faith. She spoke of a kindred spirit. Well, the only spirit that would be kindred to the Obamas is Hasatan, the adversary. Humans do not have spirits. Humans have souls. If she knew God, she would know that. And she said that Mr. Obama was inspired. Ah, a prophet for our times. Her conclusion was that Barack knows the American dream because he lived it. Oh, no, he didn't. Not unless the American dream has changed. The American dream used to be that if you were willing to work hard, if you were devoted and willing to make the sacrifices required, that you could get ahead by working for a living, by building your own company, by envisioning your own product, and having it materialized by creating value in business. But no longer. Now the American dream is to be a servant of the people and work for the government. Yes, Scott?
The government that builds all of our businesses? Because we don't?
Yes, though according to them, that would be their view, is that everything in America is directed by and a direct derivative of government as opposed to business. Yeah, it's exactly the opposite. The thing that creates value in this country are businesses and corporations. They pay all of the bills. They create the economy that makes everything else possible. Government is a leech, siphoning off their strength, weakening them. And yet, when you say that, it's so counter to the prevalent thought in America. You sound like a crazy person when you say that corporations and businesses are the source of the country's prosperity and that government is the pariah. It's the disease that is killing them. Former White House Chief of Staff Rahim, which means merciful, Emmanuel, which means God with us, who knows neither, said that the next president would set the tone for the next 40 years. That's incorrect, but hyperbole is part of politics. This was his quote. It will be the president's leadership that determines how we as a nation meet the challenges that face the middle class. It is the president's values that shape the future in which the middle class has hope. You know, you swear that this was a religious convention. Hope and values. It's not God's values again, it's Barack Obama's values. And the middle class, rather than placing their hope in economic opportunity, and rather than placing their hope on their business, their comrades, those who they associate with in business, their fellow employees, those they work with, rather than them placing their hope in even the free enterprise system, justice, no, they want people to place their hope on a politician, this politician, the messianic Barack Hussein Obama. That the challenges of the nation and the middle class rest on the vision and ability and the hopefulness of the people in their politician. It is the antithesis of what God has asked of us. If you fall prey to this, you will never know God. If that is your mindset, if you agree with them, then understand you will never know God. You will not engage in a relationship with Him. You will be precluded from ever entering His home. The prerequisite of the covenant is to walk away from such human institutions because they are beguiling. They are corrupting. This is an interesting excerpt that was found in the same BBC article. Among the changes found in the text of the Democratic Party's 2012 platform was the removal of the language from the Middle East section, referring to Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. No, you can't refer to Jerusalem, which has always been the capital of Israel. It's the capital of Yahweh's chosen land, the promised land. You can't agree with God. No, not as a Democrat. That message was replaced with a passage referring to the parties. Now, this is totally and completely the antithesis of Barack Obama's political stance as it relates to Israel. But let me read it to you to show just how deeply hypocritical they are. Unshakable commitment to Israel's security and Mr. Obama's steadfast opposition to any attempt to delegitimize Israel. You want to delegitimize Israel? What you do is what the last president did and what this president is attempting to do. You force Israel to give up Gaza and the West Bank. And Israel, within years of that time, will cease to exist. That will delegitimize Israel. This president is overwhelmingly, beyond all other things internationally, committed to forcing Israel to give up the West Bank.
So he's all for Israel, right?
But well, wrong.
I'm saying that's what they're going to go on. That's right. What they're saying. but yet he can't even say that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel?
Yeah, in fact, he is. Anybody in his administration or military or that works for the government that speaks of Jerusalem being the capital of Israel is fired.
Hey, Craig, we're friends, but you can't ever say my name, all right? that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
You see, the reason is that Muslims claim Jerusalem. They claim Jerusalem. When I met with the terrorists right after 9/11, the Aska Martyrs Brigade, Fatah terrorists, and Al Qaeda immediately after 9/11, they claimed that they had gathered around Jerusalem because the Quran speaks of Jerusalem and therefore claims it, because Muhammad allegedly rode the winged ass. He had one ass on riding on another from Mecca to Jerusalem one night around 710 A.D. to visit all of the Jewish bigwigs in the temple. Now, there's a couple of issues there. One is that asses really don't fly. And second, the temple no longer existed. But Muhammad was too stupid to know that. It had been destroyed by the Romans in 70 C.E. And there, Muhammad has claimed that he rode his flying ass from there through hell, which was up, on the way to the seven heavens, where he met with Allah after he had traveled through hell to see women dominating the place, and he described vividly their tortures. And so because of that wild ass of a ride, which followed the satanic verses, Muslims came to Jerusalem. That's why they built their dome of what I call the hoofy print, where the wild ass jumped through hell to heaven in the middle of the Temple Mount. Yes, Scott.
When you promote death, destruction, and just the overall, like, making everybody's life miserable, hell might be up. I don't know.
I will guarantee you that the Islamic paradise is hell, and that the Islamic hell does not exist. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the break. Should you wish to engage in this conversation, our number is 877-376-45. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this conversation at 877-300-7645. It is interesting, of course, that that Mr. Obama's platform says that he has an unshakable commitment to Israel's security. When you force Israel, as he is attempting to do, to not only give up Jerusalem, but to give up the West Bank after George Bush forced them to give up Gaza, thinning that nation of the waste, making it only 10 to 15 miles wide, where 70% of its population live. The nation will not survive, cannot survive, not without divine intervention. Now, if you add that looting of Israel, thinning the nation of its waste, destroying it, making it eminently vulnerable, which, by the way, is what Neville Chamberlain did when he gave the high ground of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler. Nazism and Islam are very, very similar religions. And we know what that led to. Just as the thinning of Israel and the giving of the West Bank and Jerusalem to the Muslims, what it will lead to is the next world war. But this president has overseen the largest arms sales in human history, selling 24 times more advanced weaponry to Israel's enemies than we have supplied to Israel. In the past, Israel, in some battles, had a technological edge in weaponry. That is no longer the case. Now the United States is supplying both sides. This is no longer the United States weaponry against Russian weaponry. The United States is arming both sides. That's what we do. We are the merchants of death. But we're selling 24 times more weaponry to Israel's avowed enemies than we are to Israel. Mr. Obama is lying. This is an interesting story that we're going to turn to next. I'm going to tell you this story from two different perspectives. First, we read that the society's director, Keith Porteous Wood, said that the group was fighting the action. We think that if it goes the wrong way, I should have introduced this story a little better. This is the story that we were covering at the end of our program yesterday, where I shared with you that there are four Christians who were fired from their jobs. One because he was working for a faith-based counseling service and said that he would have a tough time providing sex therapy advice to homosexuals. Another was fired because it was just a civil servant working in some podunk job, but said in a training session that, you know, it really didn't feel good about gay marriages. And two were fired for wearing crosses as necklaces. So I had shared with you yesterday that that the advocates for gay and lesbianism were looking at this as if these people are reinstated, if they win the case, then it will be bad for the homosexual agenda. And this is what Keith Porteous Wood said, who is fighting the reinstatement of these four people. He says, "We think that if the court case goes the wrong way, it will cause a hierarchy of right with religion at the top. And it's going to be bad news for the employers of gay people. It's going to be bad news for gay people," he said. When socialist secular humanism began, it began with Adam Weishaupt about the same time America was formed. Both George Washington and Thomas Jefferson both had allegiances to Adam Weishaupt, one through Freemasonry and the other through the Jacobins, who are the people that led the French Revolution. Both were inspired by Adam Weishaupt. His purpose was to put... It was to replace religion with political correctness, with his view of the religion of man, with the enlightenment of men, and with man as God. That was his idea, is if I could replace in the hierarchy of right, putting socialist secular humanism and political correctness, which drives, by the way, also the gay agenda, as the top, and religion under it, that man would control religion. And that was their agenda. And they succeeded. Now the national religion of America and Europe is, in fact, socialist secular humanism. It's the religion taught in the school. It is the religion of politics. It is the religion of the media. America now has a national religion. Well, this is Europe. Europe also has a national religion. And they do not like the idea of having their crusade to have the religion of man be superseded by the Christian religion, because of what it might mean for gays. Now, that's an interesting thought. We're going to return to this story and conclude it after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Our number, 877-300-7645. To Shattering This, I am your host, Yada. You can call us at 877-300-7645. I was trying to conclude the story that I found interesting in Europe about the four Christian women, four Christian people. I think two were men and two were women, who were fired for manifesting their religion, which is supposedly protected in Europe. I am not one of those who is an advocate of the free expression of religion. I think that the free expression of religion, so I'm not advocating for these four people. I'm simply an advocate for the truth and for people being informed. And this article has some very interesting insights that I thought were worth sharing with you. So I'm certainly not an advocate for the four people, and most certainly not an advocate for those either defending them or accusing them. And just a moment more on the Constitution advocacy for the free expression of religion or the manifestation of religion as it relates to the European Constitution. that clause will be our destruction. Well, I'm hugely in favor of free choice. I think that people ought to have the ability to choose anything they want so long as it doesn't affect others, including if you want to poison yourself with drugs, you ought to have the freedom to do so. But when it comes to the free expression or manifestation, depending on which constitution you're looking to, of religion, if you are protecting that, you cannot protect your citizens. Because religions are vicious. Doesn't matter if the religion is Nazism, socialist secular humanism, which are the most deadly of all, or Islam. Religions are deadly. By saying that we cannot limit the free expression of religion, we can't fight what happened on 9/11. That was the free expression of the Islamic religion. Means that we had a 0% chance of succeeding in Iraq or Afghanistan because those who were fighting us were expressing their religion. And so long as that clause is one of the few clauses that is actually upheld in the U.S. Constitution, there is no chance of saving America, or in this case, Europe. Now, during Mrs. Chaplin's case, she was one of those that was wearing a necklace that had a small cross on it. The claim by the National Health Service was that she breached health and safety guidelines. So, by wearing a necklace with a tiny cross on it, she breached health and safety guidelines. I mean, talk about stupid. She lost her discrimination case in 2010. Mr. McFarlane, a Christian marriage guidance counselor from Bristol, and he was one that said, you know, I'd have a tough time advising homosexuals on issues related to sexual intimacy problems. Well, he was a Christian marriage guidance counselor. You ought to think that a person saying, you know, I'm really not an expert in giving advice on homosexual lovemaking as a Christian marriage counsel would be okay. But no, he was fired because he might not be able to give sex therapy, as this article says, to homosexuals. Now, the British courts have found overwhelmingly against Christians, occasionally comparing their beliefs unfavorably to secular principles. Like I've said, throughout Europe and indeed the United States, secular humanism has become the national religion. It is considered superior. It is man as God. And so when the courts, the justice system in Britain has a ruling, it almost universally rules against Christians in favor of their much loftier, more enlightened socialist secular principles, political correctness, multiculturalism, tolerance. Now, the issue has reached the top of the legal process, and by making this an oral hearing, the European Court is clearly troubled by it and taking it very seriously. Its findings will constitute a watershed moment in what will be a slow-acting but profound social change. It seems likely that, whatever is decided in Strasbourg at the European Court hearing, the Christians will soon be able to wear crosses at work, but that the judgment on their beliefs about homosexuality will be far-reaching. It's interesting that in all likelihood, can't prove it, not even sure it matters a great deal, but in all likelihood, the founder of the Christian religion, Paul, was a homosexual. Now, he spoke against homosexuality just as the Quran speaks against Satan, when Allah is in fact Satan. But Paul only had one love. An unmarried man had but one love. Timothy. When Paul spent his life speaking out against circumcision and against the covenant, against the Torah, against Yahweh, and was brought to Jerusalem for the Jerusalem summit based upon his enormous aversion to circumcision, there was one man, a young boy, that he circumcised himself. Timothy. And so it's interesting that on a subject that isn't of much interest to God, Yeah, God mentions homosexuality a couple of times in passing in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Wasn't a issue that was significant enough to him that he would even bother speaking of it from a perspective of his two tablets of stone. But yet it becomes the watershed litmus test for so many Christians. You know, the moral majority, it's their big issue. Well, I can tell you that adultery is a far bigger issue to God. I can tell you that his name, which Christians don't even bother to know, is a far bigger issue to God. I can tell you that his covenant is the biggest issue, and there isn't a Christian on the planet that knows any of its five terms and conditions. That his Moed Mikre, the invitations to be called out and to meet with him, are infinitely more important to him than his homosexuality. And there isn't a Christian on the planet that observes them. Speaking of misguided in religion, this story I'm going to share it now from two different sides. A Catholic newspaper has removed an interview from their website in which a priest said that pedophiles are seduced by children in a lot of the cases and that abusers should not go to jail. So this Catholic priest, and he's not just an average run-of-the-mill Catholic priest that's out there in some hinterlands parish who hasn't got the memo that pedophilia is bad and that the Roman Catholic Church has been rocked internationally because hundreds of thousands of children have been abused by its clerics. No, this is a leading spokesperson for the Roman Catholic Church. And so he said that in lots of cases, the pedophiles are actually seduced by the children that they abuse. And that the abusers should not go to jail. Sounds like Islam, where the woman who's the victim of rape goes to jail, but not the rapist. Yes, Scott.
Well, how morally deprived do you have to be in order to be seduced by a child? Like, there's something wrong with you to begin with. Like, you could send up a million kids up to me and have them try and seduce me, and I guarantee you it will not work.
Of course, but you're a moral, rational human being. You're not a religious human being. The more religious a person becomes, the more misguided they become, the less they're able to exercise good judgment. Good judgment and religion do not coexist together.
These stories get to me. I hate this.
Yeah, I know. All right. So during the interview with the National Catholic Register, 78-year-old Father Benedict Groeschel was asked about his experience working with priests involved in pedophilia abuse cases. Quote, "People have this picture in their mind," he said, "of a person planning to be a psychopath." But he says that's not the case at all. Groeschel explained, "Suppose you have a man having a nervous breakdown and a youngster comes to him. And a lot of these cases, the youngster, 14 years old, is the seducer. Well, it's not so hard to see," he says, "a kid looking for a father he didn't have of his own. And they won't be planning to get into heavy-duty sex, but almost romantic embracing, kissing perhaps, sleeping, but not having intercourse or anything like that," he continued.
All wrong. All wrong.
Of course. It's an understandable thing. And you know where you find it among other clergy or important people like the clergy. You look to teachers, attorneys, and judges, and social workers. He said it's pervasive with all of them. Why didn't anyone say anything? Apparently, a number of kids knew about it, and they didn't break the ice. Well, you know, until recent years, people didn't register in their minds that this was a crime, that it was a moral failure, that it was somehow scandalous. But they didn't think of it in terms of legal things. Now, this man is a leading spokesman for the Roman Catholic Church. An And he said these things. Now, what's amazing is what we're going to find out in a subsequent article, is that the reason this article was pulled is because the Roman Catholic Register didn't have a journalist with the good sense to say, wait a minute, what you're saying here is wrong. It's been my issue with every article that I share with you from the mainstream media, whether it be the BBC, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, CNN, or Reuters, that in no case is the journalist capable of making a moral judgment on what they are hearing. That's the issue in this particular article. This priest went on and on, saying the things that any rational, normal, moral human being would say, all wrong, just as Scott just said. And yet, the journalists that run the National Catholic Register, it didn't register with them. Yes, Scott.
So a journalist finally did its job, and now they're, oh, you should have did that. You should have censored all that stuff. That makes us look bad.
No, they were the Roman Catholic Church. That wasn't their decision. It wasn't the decision that this interview was posted, and that it was, of course, all wrong. It's that the journalist conducting the interview, and the journalists who work for the Catholic Register, that none of them had the good sense to listen to what was said, which I'm sharing with you now, and say, no, wait a minute, that's wrong. No one had the moral conviction to challenge what this man said, and so they simply presented his views. We'll return to this story and why it's important after the break. I'm Yada, and this is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is the final segment of our news hour of the program. We are returning to a story where Father Benedict Groschel pointed out that sexual difficulties, now this pedophilia from Benedict Groschel's point of view, is a sexual difficulty as opposed to pedophilia. He said it was rarely prosecuted 10 to 15 years ago. So because it was rarely prosecuted 10 to 15 years ago, must have been okay. And now, if any responsible person in society would become involved in a single sexual act, not necessarily intercourse, they're done. It's a single sexual act, pal, against a child. And yes, you commit a single sexual act against a child, you're done. Yes, Scott.
So by this guy's own reasoning, with that reasoning, because it wasn't reported, it was okay.
That's right.
Right?
Okay. That's his judgment.
That means, being that we didn't hear about the Holocaust right away, it was all right until we heard about it.
I can see the parallel there. Yeah, of course.
That is, this wrong is wrong is wrong.
There is nothing worse, wronger, can we use that term? There's nothing wronger than...
More
than,
wrong?
I mean, than, I like wronger. It's going to be my word for today, wronger. There is nothing wronger than abusing a child. Taking advantage of a child when you're presenting yourself as a servant of God, as a father figure, and in a religious setting, abusing a child sexually is the wrongest act that a person can perpetrate. It is the single most repulsive of all crimes. It's why if a pedophile goes to prison, even rapists, even mass murderers can't stand to be in the same prison with a pedophile, and they'll kill him.
Children are called innocents.
Yes.
They're innocents. You're supposed to protect children.
Not according to Groschel. It's the children. They're the conniving ones. They are the seducers.
Apparently, children are far more sexual beings than I am.
Yeah. Hey, Groschel, Father Benedict Groschel went on to say, I am inclined to think on their first offense, they should not go to jail because their intention was not in committing a crime, he said. By Thursday, the original interview was no longer available on the National Catholic Register, but could be accessed in a Google cache. Quote, the editors of the National Catholic Register apologize for publishing without clarification or challenge, that's the point I was making earlier, Father Benedict Groschel's comments that seem to suggest that the child is somehow responsible for abuse. DiMello wrote, "Our publication of that comment was an editorial mistake for which we sincerely apologize." In other words, because they didn't challenge what he had to say, exercise good judgment, the thing that never happens in today's media, doesn't happen with the New York Times, doesn't happen with the BBC, doesn't happen with CNN, doesn't happen with the LA Times, does not happen in today's media, where there is no journalist or commentator that is capable of recognizing right from wrong and does not challenge lies when they are spoken, that the Catholic Register recognized that their issue here was not just that one of their leading spokespersons said something so stupid, but they published it without challenging it. Quote, "Given Father Benedict's stellar history over many years, we released his interview without our usual screening and oversight." They don't have any usual screening or oversight. "We have removed the story. We have sought clarification from Father Benedict." Clarification. Why would you seek clarification from a person like this? Now, from Good Morning America on ABC, they filed this report yesterday. A well-known Catholic priest who hosts a weekly religious television show on the Catholic Network said in an interview this week that child sex abusers are often seduced by teenage boys and should not go to jail on the first offense. But the comments were removed by the website that published them and replaced by an apology from the priest and the site's editors. The Reverend Benedict Groeschel, 79, who hosts a weekly show on the Catholic television network EWTN. EWTN is the primary Catholic television network, originally made the comments in an interview with the National Catholic Register. He also referred to convicted pedophile Jerry Sandusky as a poor guy. The interview, billed as a reflection on the 25 years since Benedict Groeschel founded the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal Order, covered many topics, but Groeschel's comments on child sexual abuse brought it national attention. If you were a Roman Catholic, you need to leave. Abandon them now. Walk away from it before it is too late. If you are a Roman Catholic and you are sending your children to anything associated with that church, then you are no better than the pedophiles who would abuse them. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. Have you ever wondered why farmers can keep their livestock lean and healthy just by feeding them minerals and a nutrient-dense diet? Before Mark...